Hello, everybody. This is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Chestnut Ridge Radio Club technical net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Alrighty, good answer, as I would like to say. Alrighty, everyone. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association and Chestnut Ridge Radio Club technical net. This net is open to all radio amateurs licensed to operate in the 2-meter band. It's a little different than other technical nets in that we encourage you to participate on a wide variety of levels and interests. It's really about having a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, computers, telecommunications, the underlying science that runs our hobby or allows us to run our hobby, what we do with it, how we serve others, how we explore the technical phases of the art, and the like. So it's a pretty wide-ranging opportunity. You can even sell or swap or look for stuff here, and I must say, I actually have an item not for sale or anything tonight, but I do have some news on the solar power front from my own experiences so far, and we'll talk about that a little while later. And I also have an interesting little piece of software and hardware that related to a spectrum analyzer that's affordable by mere mortals that we can talk about as well. So I'm sure there are other tasks and interests of others. The way you check into this net is you give your call sign, your name. You indicate whether you have a question, a comment, for sale, swap, or wanted items, some combination of those things, or none of the above. This net, by the way, is run on the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club's 2-meter repeater located in Alpine, New Jersey. The frequency is 146.955, 146.955, and the offset is minus 600. The PL is 141.3, 141.3. So the other thing you can do to get into the net, we'll have a separate check-in for it, is coming in via Echolink. I'm inclined to think that there's a problem. Noel called me. I didn't have a chance to call him back yet, but he is using cellular access, I think so. Anyway, from Florida. And he was trying to get in, and it wasn't working well for him. For some reason, the Echolink was giving him trouble. But you can also check in via Echolink via using K2FoxtrotJuliet-Lima, K2FoxtrotJuliet-Lima. So, with no further ado, let me first point out that I want to thank Randy for running the net last week, and I do appreciate that. I was actually around, but I was so ill that I couldn't even speak well enough. I can sort of speak now, but every so often I go on these coughing fits, so I have both ice cream and a tall iced tea here, so I'm in good shape for that. So Randy, W2S, thank you very much for your fine job last week. I heard about 5 or 10 minutes of the net, and that's all I could really muster. So, with no further ado, stations whose call signs begin with the letter Kilo 2. Kilo follows immediately by 2. Please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, indicate whether you have a question, comment, for sale, swap, or wanted item, some combination of things, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR.
K2GFM with a question.
Very good. K2GFM and your name, sir?
Sorry, Gordon, it's Greg.
Yeah, we just like everybody to introduce themselves. Just makes it interesting for everybody. Greg, thanks. Alrighty. Very good. Any other Kilo 2s?
Kilo 2, Echo India Romeo, K2EIR, Howie in Tarrytown, none of the above.
Good evening, Howie. other Kilo 2s?
Kilo 2, Alpha Mike India, K2AMI, it's Tony.
Hey Tony, and what are your intentions tonight?
Sorry, I have a question.
Don't be sorry that you have a question. All good. Alrighty, any other Kilo 2s? Any other Kilos?
Kilo Mike 4, Golf Hotel November. Mitch, none of the above.
Good evening, Mitch. Welcome aboard. Any other Kilos? Okie dokie. How about Whiskey 2s?
Jim in Pearl River with a question.
Wow. I was actually able to pull out two of you. Don, W2JEK, with a comment, I think, and Jim, WA2UMP, with a question. Did I get those two right? No response is good. Okay, were there any other stations in that dog pile? Okay, any other whiskeys?
Uniform 2 Sierra, Randy, with a comment.
WA2QBC, no traffic.
Okay, let's see. I got Randy with a comment. I have Bruce, WA2QBC, pardon me, with just checking in and saying hello. Hello, Bruce. Alrighty, any other whiskeys?
WI2W with a comment.
Okay, Steve, I got you with a comment, WI2W. See if I can keep up with that. Alright, very good. Any other whiskeys?
W2APP, Paul, North Mamadibo.
Good evening, Paul. Welcome back wherever the hell you've been. Good to hear you. Any other whiskeys?
W2TK, Frank, listening.
Good evening, Frank, W2TE. Welcome. As always. Any other whiskeys?
A2BAR, W2CH, Ray in White Plains with a comment. Good evening, Gordon.
Good evening, Ray. Welcome aboard. Got you with a comment. Any other whiskeys? Okay. Let's see. Let's go to November's.
N2JDH, Andre, and I'm listening. No traffic.
Hey, Andre, welcome aboard. Any other Novembers?
November 2, November Bravo Romeo. My name is Don. H is Northern Westchester. I have so far no questions or comments.
Okay, John, good evening to you as well. Any other Novembers? Yeah, Alpha Stations.
AC2T, none of the above. I'll be lurking.
Good evening, Paul. Alrighty. Any other alphas? Okay. Any stations on Echolink? Any stations I might have missed or late check-ins, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, Whiskey 2, Papa Delta, Quebec, Richard, here in Clifton, New Jersey.
Good evening, Richard. Long time no speak. Very good. Anybody else? Oh, Rich, what are your intentions?
Oh, I just wanted to do a simple check-in, Gordon. I bought one of these a little cheap Chinese radios, put a new antenna and battery in it, and you wanted to see if it worked. Back to you.
We've established you have a little hiss on your signal, but you're on an HT, so it sounds good. Any other stations wishing to check in?
Kilo Delta 2, Delta India Golf, Don in Massapequa and listening.
Good evening, Don. Welcome from Massapequa. Just curious, how many inches of snow did you get the other day in the sort of non-snow event?
Oh, good evening, Gordon. We got about 12 to 14 inches, I reckon. But it was blowing pretty hard, so it's hard to get an accurate measurement. I'd say a foot.
Yeah, we got between that and about two-thirds of that. depending on where you are in this area. Very good. I was just curious. Any other stations?
K2BAR.
This is KB2TRW. Good evening, Gordon.
Good evening, Kai. You sound very domestic at this point. Do you have any intentions tonight?
No questions, no comments, just listening.
Okie dokie, got you covered. All right, any other stations wishing to check in? Alrighty, I don't normally do this, but I think tonight I'm going to take the extra effort to make sure I have everybody in there. K2GFM, Greg with a question. K2EIR, Howie. K2AMI, Tony with a question. KM4GHN, Mitch. W2JEK, Don with a comment. W2S, Randy with a comment. WA2QBC, Bruce. WI2W, Steve with a comment. W2APP, Paul. W2TKE, Frank. W2CH, Ray with a comment. N2JDH, Andre. N2NBR, John. AC2T, Paul. W2PDQ, Richard. KD2DIG, Don. KB2TRW, Kai. Any corrections or additions?
Yeah, Gordon, there was a glitch. I couldn't see if you got my question in. WA2UMP with a question.
I do, in fact, have you with a question.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, then let's get right to it. W2JEK, Don, you're first up. K2BAR.
Thank you, K2BAR, and then that W2JEK. Good evening, everybody. Well, Barrow will be running its next DE test session Friday, February 20th at 7 p.m. at the Westwood Regional High School. And if you're coming, you'll need an ID, like a photo driver's license or a passport. Don't have photo ID. Two forms of non-photo ID. Test fee is $15. Haven't gotten a license yet. You'll need your social security number, or you can get ahead of time an FRN number from the FCC. Those who are upgrading, we'll use their FRN number that's already on their license. And for upgrading, please bring a copy of your license, your current license, and a copy of that license for us. And people wish to use a calculator they made. The calculator's memory must be empty. Calculator. It cannot be a cell phone or an iPod or one of the other electronic marvels of this age. As you can put it open on your calculator. Up for a second. Okay, and one thing that back in July, the FCC decided to give credit to people whose licenses expired and were on the 2-year grace period if they held a general or an advanced or an extra class license. They can get themselves back on the air by taking the current technician license exam. So, get for their general. Had an advanced license, they would get a general license because advanced extras will get an extra class license. I saw something that came off the internet today, that the FCC is no longer going to issue paper licenses unless you actually ask for them. You have to get more information about that and just how it's going to be handled. Now I have to find out what this. Keep that in mind. Back to net, W2JEK.
Okay, so Don, if they don't issue a paper license anymore, do you have the option of obtaining one?
Yes, but if you when you fill out your 605 form and put down a site address or your email, put down your email address, I don't think they'll mail it to you. You'll have to. That's the catch with that. I don't know all the ins and outs on this thing. There's a lot of that I'm not really sure about though at this point. I do know you can request a paper license if you do require it. One thing they mentioned is that the people going for M license plates going to have some kind of a government issue thing, not something that was printed out on the internet. So it could be a problem for people who have a M call letter license plates. Back to that.
Yeah, I think it would. I think it would be a big, huge problem. That's interesting, nonetheless. Thank you for elaborating on that. Anybody have any questions for Don?
I'm after K2EIR.
Pat Howie?
It's not exactly a question or for Don, but relevant to this is certainly used to be a regulation that you had to post your station license at your station. And if there's no more printed license, would that requirement continue? Because obviously, if you could print it, then you could post it. But, you know, would they require posting if they're not issuing it? And it just brings up the whole thing about how serious is enforcement. How do you prove that you're a ham? They have to go look you up on the database. I mean, that might be more authoritative, but not having paper, I don't know where the FCC is going or where regulation is going, but methinks I don't feel comfortable with this. Thank you. K2EIR.
Comment. Go ahead, Steve. Oh, I'm sorry, maybe it wasn't Steve. The station who wanted to make a comment?
N2 GADH, K2BAR. Yeah, I have the email that was sent to a couple of the RACES operators. And one of them, it says, licensees also may contact FCC support via the web, telephone, or mail to request a paper license. In addition, there is going to be a license manager on the left side of it that allows you to apply for a new license, set paper authorization or preferences, the download an electric, electronic authorization, and any type of associated license that's along with the FRN. I'm going to send it to you, Gordon. If you don't mind, I'll send it to the group as well.
I should point that out. Comtech Group is our email distribution on Yahoo Groups. Charlie Oscar Mike, Tango Echo, Charlie Hotel, Golf Romeo Oscar Uniform Papa, all one word. It's a Yahoo Group, Comtech Group. If you would, Andre, be so kind as to send it to me at w2ttt@att.net, w2ttt@att.net, and at .com, if you would. I don't have my personal email up here tonight for a whole lot of reasons, if you would send it to include my work email, that would be helpful. And if you can't post it to the Comtech Group, I certainly will after the net. That's also a good place to find files of interest, pointers to other resources, the notes from the net, etc. So I would encourage people to join the Comtech Group if you haven't already. Alrighty, anybody else on this topic? Into NBR. John, go ahead.
This has a taste of deregulation in it, as far as handbands go, and I would hate to see that. But, it sounds like this is emanating from someplace in Washington, and just is a healthy thing to do to be able to not identify the fact that you're a federally licensed ham writer. Back to you, Gordon.
Yeah, a couple of things do come to mind. One is there is a tendency in the federal government to go paperless. That's number one. Number two, there's also a... thank you, Andre. There's also in situations where you have to post a copy of your license, you'll still have to do that. So you will have to go set about printing your license and putting it up, on whatever piece of equipment. Let's say you have a repeater, a remote base, a RC device that's in the amateur band. All of those require, if not your call sign, at least your station call sign and contact information. So I would take that seriously. And do that. I think the only thing that troubles me about this is that there was a requirement to be able to produce your original amateur radio license and not one that was a copy.
And without the official government paper and all that other mishigas, I'm wondering how that requirement for the original license, because now every printed copy is an original, if you think about it. So I'm kind of curious as to how that's going to work, how they're going to do watermarking and things like that. But we will find out. I'm not horribly troubled by this, in all honesty, but I am concerned about gaps in the in compliance and also little ripples that it might cause. But I would think having as official-looking presentation of your license is now going to be your problem and not the FCC's, and you might want to take it upon yourself to make sure that that's true, right down including lamination and other things. Anybody else?
KM4GHN, brief comment.
Go right ahead, Mitch.
Relatively new ham here, but been familiar with the FCC since early 70s. Never got my original from, I think, September, October. I called the FCC a week and a half ago. They said, just print it. It's perfectly acceptable. Fortunately, Echolink will not accept that, the photograph of that. So, yeah, we seem to be in a transitional period here. That's basically it. It's a little frustrating.
Sorry, we had a test session recently, and one of my my assistant scoutmasters got their licenses, but my one scout did not, and very odd. We're not sure why. He does live in a multiple dwelling unit, and that is in itself disturbing. I'm wondering how they're going to secure printing of that. In other words, making sure that only the people who are authorized to print the license are going to do that. I guess you're going to have a login on the FCC website. Is that how it works now, or can anyone go print the license of, you know, John Q. Ham?
KM4GHN, I had to log in to the ULS, I think it's called, and, you know, FRN account. Not sure about if anybody can access that.
So if someone, quote, loses your password and gives a new email, they could conceivably get control of your FRN account, and away they go.
Looks that way. KM4GHN on the side.
Okay. So let's consider this. We now are in a position where more security is put in to logbook of the world than it is having your printed copy of your license. Think about that. I'm not saying it's good or bad, I'm just noting it. I always wonder who would want to steal their way to the honor roll, but then again, I see some of these idiots, and, you know, so be it. All right. End of rant about logbook of the world and the DX honor roll and the pursuit of semi-political geographic entities. Political and semi-political geographic entities. But anyway, back to Don.
Yeah, okay, Gordon. Everybody, thank you for the comments. Yeah. One thing it said that they were saving a magnificent amount of $304,000. I'm wondering how much they can spend on life habits of some kind of a toad or kind of an obscure fish or something. I think they're worried on $4,000. One thing they did mention, right now they are printing licenses on the plain paper. They're not using the paper that they had been using. I don't know how they've been saving money by doing that, but they weren't going to live it with this paper business. I think there will really be a lot of active work like Portable Day. You go on Portable Day and you run into a cop and he wants to see your license. You know, don't want to pull out something that looked like you just made it, took it out of a printer, you made up yourself. You want to get an official card. This is not a, as far as people in emergency situations. Aries, Racies, or whatever, your license, somebody hit on your printer at home, at request, just make the appointment. If you have any thought in mind that you might want to go and type a copy, put in a request for it, and have to comply with the fact of that. Incidentally, I'm going to get a hold of the VE at this test session coming up, And I'm going to have to ask them, do they have any, can they put up a handout that I can give these people that they're going to get a license or a paper copy or whatever. Tell them how to deal with it. Next in that, W2JEK.
There's a cottage industry here about to emerge of really nice looking amateur radio licenses that, I've made a habit over the last bunch of years, maybe the last decade or two, when they went to that single sheet with the certificate and the wallet thing, I would carefully cut out the certificate and have it copied and then laminated, both the copies and the original, on the funky yellow paper, which you're saying they don't use anymore. And then I would carefully fold the wallet size and have a luggage tag sized thing made. I would cut one, take the luggage piece off of it, and stick it in my wallet so it wouldn't be too long. But it had more bulk to it than the normal lamination. And then the others I would keep to attach to equipment. But in all my portable kits and in my car, I would keep the large format certificate. I'm thinking, based on a couple of interactions I've had with law enforcement and other government officials in public places, that maybe the wise answer is to also keep a copy of the amateur radio regulations with you in the public. You're supposed to have one in your amateur station, but I'm thinking that a copy of that pocket guide or even a printout of it would be smart to do in your portable kit just for the COPU or other public official who just is unaware of what amateur radio is. That would be probably a good thing, and maybe a blurb from the ARRL. Don?
W2JK, yeah, I think something like that. I have you do. I carry my pocket license, and I have my other one here, and it's 5x7 in a frame check. Pocket license has been laminated. Is in the wallet. The other one is the big one in your frame. So we'll have to see how this all plays out. Hey, you can get four licenses from them. They have a need for it. Back to that. W2JK.
For anybody else?
W. Common.
Who is that, Co?
This is Kai, KB2, TRW, with Common.
We doubled a little bit, Kai. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Okay, is this in response to the ARRL announcement made today about the amateur radio license policy paperless going into effect on February 17th?
That's correct, okay. W2JK.
Okay, I saw that announcement, and I'm not sure if there's any provision for the FCC to print out any paper copy back on their original heavy stock colored paper.
I think there is some kind of authentication copy. It's not something. There's a difference between what you can make and what they can make. So with some kind of authentication on it, you got to really read through that thing. It's lots of the innuendo there that we have to find out what they really mean.
W2CA.
Go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, I was reading, maybe it's already said, but the announcement, something about a watermark that would show up when you print it if it's an authentic one. But, if you looked at the paper, but they said that they would only do things or something like that, plain paper. They cost six times as much for the paper they used to use.
Yeah, so per Don's point earlier, that they're not using the watermark paper.
Yeah, so I don't see how you'd be able to do a watermark without that paper, but I know it's handy to have the full sheet, at least a copy. When I went to Antigua 11 years ago, I had in my suitcase with my rigs there, because they did check it with TSA, and Also, the person, the official I went to get my V-25CH down there.
And did they require an original or a copy was sufficient for your V-25CH?
Thankfully, a copy was, and I have a good printer. As a matter of fact, now I can print pretty well. My best with a laser printer is like a book, like a photograph. But he did take it, and the copy in the suitcase was just my copies that were in color. So I guess there wasn't that much questioning, but, you know, that's just my experiences in traveling, that if I've had ham equipment or I take a full copy with me traveling just to show it looks more official at least.
I know when I travel and I check baggage which has equipment in it, it often includes things for both work and amateur radio. Inside, I keep a copy of my company ID, a photocopy of my company ID, and a copy of my amateur radio license for just that reason. And they're both laminated and easily accessible on top when they open it up.
Well, just if I'm lucky, I have a military ID. I have other veterans ones, you know, kind of official, some other things that haven't been a federal investigator, so I guess that helps.
Yes, sometimes those kinds of connections have some residual utility. Thank you, Ray. Anybody else?
KB2 TRW.
Go ahead, Kai.
Yeah, I'm commenting because I just renewed my license a few weeks ago, and I just received the renewal copy in the mail, and it says, yeah, there's a watermark that says official copy, but it pretty much looks like anything I can, or anybody can create, either off Word or Acrobat, and it looks like it's on a 20-pound stock that you can buy from anywhere. So that's what I got from the FCC. Back to that.
Let me tell you something. When I remember people commenting about how my amateur license didn't look like anything to shake a stick at, and that was a 1975 license, and then I would go into the ham shacks of some of the old timers and see what the FCC, and in one or two cases the Department of Commerce, issued, and I said, wow, now I understand why you think that.
W2CA.
Go ahead, Ray.
I remember quite a few years ago, for the amateur extra, I knew these twin brother hams. I spoke to one recently. They got a, I'm not sure if it was blue, but they got a bit of a certificate. I don't mean that one you can buy like I got myself for extra, or the ARL one you could get or something like that. There was a more official certificate from the FCC. I'm talking about 40 years ago when they got their extras and had a two-letter call.
Back in the 70s vanity program?
Well, one of them, they're twin brothers, both engineers, same company, and one was a K1 and one a W1. I don't know how they got the two-letter calls back then, but they did it at the same time. And they had a larger-looking certificate from the FCC that they used to give. If I'm correct, I just remember something they had up on the wall.
B2JEK.
Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, my father, when they came out with the extra class license back whenever it was in the 60s there, I think, somewhere in there, my father heard about it, and he went right down and got one. One of the first people to get it. They did have the big certificate like Ray mentioned. I remember seeing that. I don't know where that is right now. I probably have it downstairs someplace. I also have his license of 1922, which is a like a 9x12 piece of paper, and it has Herbert Hoover's name on it as Secretary of Commerce. So that was quite a certificate. Back to that, W2JK.
Even though the signature was an auto pen, it's still impressive. Anybody else?
W2PDQ.
Ahead, Richard.
But, you know, this seems just a bit ironic, Gordon. This FCC just sold off like a couple $1 billion worth of frequency here. Probably some of us just lost part of the 900 megahertz band. And I do remember when the commercial license was like a diploma. It was something that would impress somebody. No longer. When I brought to prove a change of address to New Jersey for a driver's license, they looked at the license that I had from the FCC and said, that's not acceptable. All back to you, Gordon.
Yeah, you're thinking about the $44.9 billion AWS-3 block that was auctioned off, that closed, I guess, today. We don't know who the winners are, actually, which is kind of ironic. I don't understand why they don't know, but they don't. But I guess it takes them that long to make sure that everything's right. But they go through several cycles a day and quite an exercise. And that auction started back in November, just to give everybody some ideas. And there's many rounds, sometimes many rounds a day. 10-minute rounds, one-hour rounds. I forget how they work it. But the previous auctions were in the 10 or 15 billion range. This one was far more valuable. And if you look up AWS 3 auction block or frequency block, you'll see why that spectrum is attractive. I can only imagine what the 600 meg spectrum auction is going to look like next year when they finally get around to it. That's going to be very entertaining. But if I recall, the AWS 3 blocks were at 1700 and 2100 megahertz. I'm doing this from memory, so forgive me, but yeah. Those funds also are bound for the general fund. They don't go to the FCC, so do consider that. And, you know, while we get sentimental about all this, as long as we have an adequate documentation and adequate security around that documentation, I think that we're all right. I mean, there are things that are just being made paperless, and it's part of the change, so we're going to have to think of new and creative ways to make our amateur stations look sharp and to put a professional view forward. So that's my advice to everybody. Anybody else? Go ahead, Ray.
Sorry to take up the time. Just a question on those frequencies. I heard what you said they're auctioning now. Are those the frequencies, if I may ask, they're taking away from the higher UHF TV channels?
That's next year at the earliest. That's the 600 meg block.
That's what I meant. Because above 500 something, it used to go to the almost 900 where the cell phones are when they took the upper channels away, and you could hear them still on the old TVs with tuners that went to channel 83 before they were digital. You could hear the cells. But I was wondering, yes, you've answered me that the 600 is that, because I think they're stopping. I know we're getting off subject, above channel 51 or something.
That's correct. Let's see. I'm looking here for the AWS 3 blocks. And I see a frequency map for AWS 1 and 2. I don't see. Oh, I think I know where AWS 3 is going to be, but it's a little odd. But anyway, some of them are paired blocks, and some of them are not, which is kind of interesting. I can suggest that one-way services or download services could make good use of those one-way blocks, whereas the paired blocks, you know, would be probably more useful for traditional cellular and bidirectional data. God knows there's a need for both. Okay, so just for reference, AWS 3 is 1695 to 1710, 1755 to 1780. Both are 15 megahertz blocks. And then 2155 to 2180, that's a 25 meg block. Not exactly sure how they're all paired out, but I will put into the notes the advanced wireless services block auctions, and you can look at AWS 3. I'll put that in the notes here so that if someone raised it, you can learn about AWS 3 auctions as well. What the heck? Anybody else?
KM4GHN, final brief reply.
Ahead, Mitch.
For what it's worth, under the for what it's worth column, I spoke with the FCC young woman last week, and I said I'd need the initial license, you know, the actual hard copy with watermark. She said it makes no difference anymore, just print it out. And I did, although I did not see any faux or any type of watermark in that printed document. Back to that.
Alrighty. Very good. So yes, I think plain paper printing is now considered, you know, your game. I would advise printing out really clean copies, laminating them and framing them. And also keep laminated copies in all sorts of places, both of the pocket version and also in your vehicles and in your luggage and any of your go kits and the like. I will say this, the certificate size is really nice to have in your go kit. And I also will say that having luggage tag size makes a good tag for a accountability tag. So that's something to think about as well. You could conceivably have a couple of them kicking around and annotate them as to whether or not they're the you know, the board copy or the body copy, you know, that you put on your body if should you go into an action area. So that's something to think about as well, maybe for emergency response. All right. Don, can I hand it back to you for any last comments on this topic?
Okay, as I said before, I think I'm up with the BEC right now. I have some handouts so that I can give these to people without trying to explain to them how to get the copy if they need it or what they're going to have to do to get a paper, get a copy. I think what you're going to do is get up on the, like, it'll be on their website, so you just have to print out what they have on their website, and the information I have to give these people that come to the test session. That'll be in the works with me, how they're going to handle all this. Back to next, and I think we're supposed to subject right now, where it all ends. Back to next, WCJK.
I would tend to agree. Alrighty, thank you very much. Alrighty, with, let's see, no further ado, let's get to Greg's question. We got a lot of stuff here tonight. It's kind of amazing. We burned through most of an hour, but that's pretty awesome, actually. K2GFM, your question, K2BAR.
K2BAR, this is K2GFM. Thanks. Just a quick sort of wrap-up on the last conversation. Just please, if a local police officer asks you for your license, give it to him, or regardless of what quality it is, and listen to what he says. I think that's an important thing. Anyway, my question is around, I'm new to amateur radio, and I'm installing my first roof antenna, and I have some LMR400 flex coax, and my question is around the stripping and the crimping of connectors on that coax. Two specific questions on that and one general question. With the coax connectors, the RF connectors, how far does the center core have to go through the actual crimp RF connector? Does it go all the way to the point where it's just about sticking out of the tip?
That's question number one. And the second question is, how far does the actual connector have to slide down the outer sheathing of the coax cable itself? And the wrap-up question is, do you guys ground your coax coming from the roof down before it goes into the house?
Yeah, I'm going to answer the last question first. We all should pass our coaxes through a lightning arrestor that, by definition, has the shield going to a ground before it enters the house. Having said that, I can tell you an awful lot of hams who don't do that, and they just coil up the cables or the jumper cables at the windowsill or whatever, or have a bulkhead connector that just stops there and just leaves it, and they remove all the other cables from the area. Your mileage may vary. Those who have been bit by lightning are not fans of that latter approach. I'll just say that for good measure. Now, going on to crimping connectors. Do you have LMR 400? Are you putting ends or PL-259s or something else on there?
It's PL-259.
Okay. There are some wonderful videos on YouTube, and also some, I found something on Tesco, which was not bad, a prep kit actually. But I'll be real honest, the center conductor should be fully engaged into that center pin within the crimp space. That should not be a question. I don't know if it's a crimp and solder type connector you're using, or solder optional, but I'm partial to having that center conductor soldered in addition to crimped, because I've seen them move with temperature, and that can be embarrassing, to say the least. Let's see. I found a YouTube video immediately for an end connector. If you're using a crimp type, let's not go there. Too much audio. And an ad, a 3-second ad that I didn't want to watch. But there are lots of good guidance. Depends on which connector you're using too. If you're using a particular vendor's connector, make sure that you have the matching crimp tool for that particular type of crimp connector. And they usually have it measured out and shown in graphical form pretty handily as to how to do that. Have you looked at any of those yet?
Yep, I do have the appropriate crimp connector and the PL-259 crimp heads. I'm a software engineer, and I've made tons of cables, Cat 5, Cat 6, all of that stuff, including the old Ethernet cables. So I'm not new to the crimping. It's just I'm not. I don't know. I guess it was easier back in the day because things were smaller and simpler. These big PL-259 connectors are big. So I wasn't sure, how much do I actually jam into the back end of the PL-259 crimp connector.
Well, all the ones I'm looking at, the PL-259s, there's a couple of common sense things that come to mind. One is, run the center conductor up as far into the pin as it will let you. Crimp it, solder it, and then deal with the rest of the connector. The other thing you will see very commonly is that there's heat shrink on the back side of that connector. I cannot emphasize enough how good an idea that is. And even if you're going to tape it and goop it and do all sorts of other stuff,
it is a wonderful idea to also put over that junction between the coax and the back of the crimp ferrule a healthy length of heat shrink tubing. Anybody else have any thoughts?
2EIR.
Howie?
There's a variety of videos on YouTube, and each one has a different opinion. But my own opinion is never, ever crimp. I'm sorry. Never, ever crimp on anything outdoors to long-term use, and especially at high power. There was a video where Dave Sumner, the CEO of the ARRL, went to England several months ago, and there was a talk at that radio club, and the guy was a famous DXer, and he explained why not the crimp. That's what I remember about it. But again, you'll find all kinds of opinions, but mine is don't crimp. I'll stand off the soapbox now. W2TTT from K2EIR.
Yeah, let's see what we can find on that. That's very entertaining. Did he write that up in QST?
No, I don't think so. I'm trying to remember if there's probably some mention on the ARRL website. I'm not sure if it was Surrey, England, but Dave Sumner was, you know, spoke before a radio club in England, and it was in the last year.
Comment?
Station?
Gordon Bruce, just an FYI, Times Microwave is doing crimps on all their commercially made cable sets.
I am aware. I don't have a problem with crimping as long as you have the option of soldering the center conductor in particular. I find less migration problems with the shield, but that's just my own experience. I personally solder mine anyway, but I'm not going to have a stroke over it. It's a mother of apple pie and religion, and I think we've all been burned by poor connections one way or another. And let me say this, I have soldered center conductors on end connectors and had that center conductor on the end connector sucked out of the connector it was mated to by, you know, contractions in the coax or expansions in the shield of the coax. So I get it. That's very possible. A few years ago, I came upon some really interesting solder-on type of end connectors that I think I got them online somewhere, and the pin is fixed into the connector, much like a PL259, and it's soldered much like a PL259. Where it lacks is that it no longer has the weatherproofing of an N. The stock Amphenol N, amazingly enough, is designed to be moderately waterproof, in and of itself. The whole connector is designed to stand direct rainfall for quite a while and still be effective. You do lose that, but that's okay. And Times Wire and the cable, cable experts, all those guys use a combination of crimp and solder with heat shrink tubing on the outside to keep things nice and happy. So that's what I've seen. Anybody else?
WU2S.
Randy.
Yeah, I think I've been successfully using Times Microwave cable, both the 240 and the 400, and their line of crimp connectors. And you need the right tool to do it properly, and look at how they recommend to do it. But if you put them on properly, solder the center pin as it's supposed to be, and most importantly, put that good piece of adhesive lined heat shrink tubing on the outside of the ferrule. I think you can't go wrong. Back to net.
WI2W. Randy, go Steve.
So use those two-piece solderable end connectors, and I've been using them very successfully for a lot of number of years on my satellite station and any place I need an end connector. So I like them a lot. And then I just waterproof them the usual way with electrical tape, rescue tape, whatever it is you're comfortable with. Regarding TL-259, Tim Duffy, K3LR, who owns that magnificent contest station out near Dayton, Ohio, as you're on the way out and you see it on the left, he has a nice video up on YouTube. If you Google or get into YouTube and then search on YouTube, K3LR, he has a lot of videos, but the one in particular is called Contest University Italy 09. It's a 6-minute video, six and a half, something like that, and he shows his technique for putting on TL-259s. And reliability and weatherproofing is very important to Tim because he puts a lot of time and effort into his contest work. So that's a good place to start if you're looking for putting on TL-259s.
Okay, I found the link to that video, and I will. So this is antennas for contesting.
Yeah, but during that video, he shows how you put the connectors on step by step.
Yes, I understand. And he's an ex-cellular guy, just for your reference. He worked for Dobson. He was the chief technology officer for Dobson for years. And he became even more on my radar when AT&T bought Dobson. For a couple of years, he was an AT&T executive, and we got to chat a little bit more on corporate back and forth stuff, but eventually he met his contractual obligations and left to do something else, and he has a lot more time for ham radio now. I suspect he's a few more dollars to spend too, so God bless him. Tim Duffy's a good guy. Just want you to know on a number of levels. Let's see, I thought maybe there was another station who had a comment. I want to say it was Bruce.
Yes, indeed. Group WATKBC. All the cables from Cisco, whether it was TNC, RPTNC, N, were all mostly done by Pines under contract. They were all crimped, and the vendor Cisco ultimately recommended the usual heavy waterproofing on the outside. You obviously can't solder a center pin on an end after the whole thing's been crimped together.
Good point. Alrighty. Anybody else?
K2BIR.
Howie?
Again, I'm not by the computer, and I don't remember which video, but when I was looking at all these videos, and I think I had Steve's help then, WI2W, one of the videos I saw suggested that you not only solder the center conductor, but you actually solder the shield to the PL-259. And he did it, you know, differently than the standard way you put on a PL-259. It was on the outside. So again, there are a lot of opinions, but soldering seems to be something that a lot of people believe in, and I do. It's just a personal thing, I have to admit, but again, I've heard a few of the contesters, the people who have the high power stations outdoors for a period of years, talk about less failure when it's done that way. Of course, with all the waterproofing, you know, that's an important part. And one way I learned about doing waterproofing was to spray it with Krylon, you know, the clear enamel or the paint, because that would get into all the crevices and so forth, and first treat it with Penetrux. But, you know, the interesting thing about the connectors and antennas is it's sort of, I think, now with YouTube, of course, you see more, but I think it's a tradition that's handed down. You know, it's like you become an apprentice to someone. You get mentored in this if you want to learn how to do it the right way, quote, the right way. And there are the different schools.